Welcome back to the Open Source Startup Podcast. I'm Robbie from Cowboy Ventures, joined as always by Tim Chen from Essence VC. And today we are very excited to have a repeat guest on the platform. We have Andre, who's the co-founder of Encore.dev, which is a back-end development platform for teams building cloud-based distributed systems. And we had Andre on about 2 years ago, and their open source project has grown quite a bit since then. So we're really excited to talk through learnings on product, on go-to-market, and a bunch of different things. So welcome, Andre.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Awesome. So for folks who did not hear the last podcast episode, why don't we do a quick background of how Encore started and what kind of the original project looked like?
Sure. So I've been working as a software engineer my whole life. And before I founded Encore, I was at Spotify building distributed systems. And Spotify has a huge platform team. About 30% of the engineering headcount today, it's over 1,000 people doing platform engineering alone. And I was still feeling that it was a really frustrating and slow and complicated experience, even with that level of investment. And when I was looking at the startup ecosystem, essentially every company in the world was going through the same motion of, okay, we're going to build our product, everything is great. But then you start to realize like, oh, we need to invest in our own tooling. We need to build Kubernetes automation. We need to invest in DevOps, that sort of thing. And when you find something that every single company is doing and repeating what every other company is doing, it's a huge waste of time. It's a huge waste of money. And if you have to sort of do that investment over several years before you start to see the impact and the benefits, you're also sort of leaving productivity on the table. And so what Encore is essentially we're taking a very opinionated stance on how to build and provide a really productive platform for building backends and distributed systems. And we're productizing it so that instead of you having to go off and build that yourself, you can buy Encore. And a huge part of it is open source. So you also don't have to pay us to use it. But a lot of startups rather do that than sort of use the open source version and do a lot of the work themselves. That's sort of why they're using it in the first place, is to sort of outsource the developer productivity aspect.
Yeah. And so we talked 2 years ago. Well, obviously we talked more than that, but on the podcast, we talked 2 years ago, and looking at a product offering, looking at your website, I mean, it still looks great, but definitely has a bunch of changes. Maybe it's also to remind folks that are just getting to know you, you know, you specifically wanted to talk this, you're building distributed systems. You're not just building apps, right? So talk maybe about like, okay, what do you offer? What kind of systems you want people to build? And if you have any actually examples, right? What are people actually building with you? I will give it people a chance to understand like why Encore is great.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times when you're building something that is, it's sort of bigger than like a Hello World application. Like if you're building something that, you know, you're turning it into a product, you're going to sell it, you're a company building. And what you find is that there are a lot of tools out there that help you get up and running really quickly. And I'm thinking of things like Supabase and Firebase and these sort of products. They are really great at sort of going from zero to one, but quite quickly you run out of road because it's essentially an all or nothing proposition. It's quite difficult to use them in conjunction with the major cloud providers. And so what we wanted to focus on is sort of the next step from that, when you actually have something and you want to start to leverage the cloud. And typically, if your mindset is, we need to use Kubernetes, then that's sort of a good point where Encore is useful. And so Encore is really designed to help handling the problems when you're sort of operating with Kubernetes or beyond. And we're talking, you know, you might have more than one backend service. You don't have to go full microservices, but you're at least starting to break apart your system. You're not just using a single database for everything you're doing, like whether that's Supabase or Firebase, but you're actually starting to use more cloud infrastructure. So things like PubSub for event-driven systems, or you want to use caching, or you want to use more complicated interactions where you actually want to break apart your system. And that's really when the complexity of the cloud really starts to kick in. And things that seemed really easy before, you end up spending a lot of time on. And so that's really where Encore comes into its own. And it really dramatically accelerates the development process compared to doing it yourself and sort of automating Kubernetes for yourself and working locally and all of these things. So that's sort of the use cases that we're targeting. In terms of customers, it's really across the board. We have everything from, most of these are startups, but it's things like building a new bank. It's e-commerce. It's a sort of online veterinary clinics. It's generative art and blockchain, fintech companies, B2B. It's B2C companies. It's really across a wide variety of industries. But what they have in common typically is, you know, they're building something that needs to scale. We're seeing a lot of interest in sort of the fintech space in general, because we've started by only targeting Go as a programming language. And Go is really well suited for fintech in particular. So there's been sort of an affinity there. But whether it's fintech or anything that scales, that's been where our customers are primarily been using it so far.
So I'm curious, versus 2 years ago, what is a general sentiment that you're feeling in the market around Kubernetes? Because it does feel like there has been like not any good competitor that's emerged, but there's just more and more kind of groans about how complicated it is, which leaves an opportunity for startups to come in and simplify management of it. But how do you feel like general sentiment has changed, or if at all?
It's a great question. I think what we're seeing is there's more skepticism. You know, I think, as you mentioned, 2 years ago, it was sort of at the peak of the hype cycle where people weren't really being sort of rational about it, right? Like they just went like, okay, we're going to use Kubernetes. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. That's not really how people think. These days, it's more like we're going to use Kubernetes with reluctance and trepidation because it's complicated. And so Encore is, it's certainly not Kubernetes specific. Like one of the big selling points of Encore is Encore abstracts away how you're running your services. So you're defining the services and you're defining the infrastructure resources that they use. But then Encore can take that and it can package your application and deploy it in lots of different ways. So exactly the same source code you can take and you can deploy to Cloud Run or Kubernetes or Fargate on AWS or a bunch of other targets. You can deploy everything sort of individually, or they can all be combined into like a modular monolith if you don't want the complexity of a bunch of distributed services. But then you get all of the benefits where Encore really simplifies running it locally. What we see and why I think these days a lot of companies adopt Kubernetes very early anyway is because even though they feel it's too complicated for what they need, they don't want to go through the effort of sort of re-architecting things down the road. And so they'd rather take that pain right now because they know that's where they're going to end up. And I think that's, it probably makes sense. What we see a lot of our customers do is they actually don't start with Kubernetes because they don't need to. You know, when you want Kubernetes, you can sort of get Kubernetes with the flick of a button. And there are tons of different approaches to sort of achieving that besides Encore. And I think that's probably a better approach to sort of defer Kubernetes until you need it. But I understand the sort of decision-making behind like, okay, let's just, we don't want to spend time re-architecting things. So let's just get it over with.
So yeah, I think comparing to 2 years ago, if my memory is serving me right, you weren't deploying it to Amazon and Google's accounts for your customers, right? You were actually more of a managed pass for the most part. And looking at your product offering pages beyond all the features, one thing I've definitely noticed is like you also have DevOps workflows, like infrastructure provisioning, ticketing, and things like that. So it's looking more of a team and development platform rather than just the infra pieces you can run, like a lot of backend offerings. Maybe talk about why the reasoning behind it, because obviously, you know, all startups, we have to pick our path of what we focus on. And, you know, we can't do everything well. You know, you picked a particular path, which is like a more team-based, everybody from development to DevOps and the whole workflow you want to cover, rather than, hey, here's Redis, here's Postgres, here's all the databases, right? Most backend platforms are trying to be more breadth of things they can offer because they want to appeal to everybody. Talk about the trade-offs here, because I think that's not an obvious thing most people are doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a super good question. Essentially, the underlying philosophy behind Encore is, if you look at as you say, a development process, right? Like, you're a startup and you want to ship features quickly. And then you look at, what are the developers doing? And you sort of break down their tasks into like, okay, they're writing some code and then they're setting up a Docker locally and they're doing, and you just create a list of all the things they do to actually go from an idea to working feature in production. It's like hundreds of tasks, right? It's such a sort of breathtaking amount of complexity when you're looking at like, okay, how many different pieces of technology are we interfacing with to ship a new version or a new feature? I think the difficulty that companies have when it comes to developer productivity is that it's very difficult to create a really productive workflow when the workflow consists of like 100 pieces of technology, right? Because they're not designed seamlessly. And that's really what a lot of platform engineering and a lot of DevOps becomes, is like, how do we integrate these pieces with each other? And a lot of that is just like, how do we shove this square peg into this round hole so that we have something that works, at least? It's not pretty, it's not productive, but it works. And that's sort of the status quo, if you will. What our philosophy was, if that's the status quo, there's a lot of opportunity to build something that is, you know, incredibly more productive if we can take something and make it more integrated. And by taking control over more of that experience, you can really make an impact on the whole experience rather than just like finding one of these 100 tasks and optimizing it. Because even if you optimize it to the point where, you know, you're spending no time at all on that particular task, and that's sort of like the value proposition that you're selling as a dev tools startup, the overall productivity boost is on the order of 1% if that's just one task out of 100. So that was our philosophy. And I think what we found is that sort of makes sense in theory, but you also have to sort of meet companies and meet customers where they are. And, you know, what we found when we were talking to, you know, prospects again and again was, they said, I mean, all of this sounds great, but what about all the stuff we already have, you know? And so I think that was where it was a lot of give and take, where we need people to see the value of Encore from sort of a value proposition and a workflow, but we also need to meet them where they are and we need to work with the things that they are using already. And so it very much is a trade-off, and we could have come farther if we were just like, we're just going to build the best product ever, and the only way you're going to use it is if you're willing to throw away everything that you have. But I don't think that's a very sort of realistic approach to sales, right? Because we actually, a lot of our early customers were like that, and they were very happy very early on, but we struggled to really scale that from a go-to-market perspective because it's very difficult to find companies when they haven't built anything yet. I mean, you're not going to go and find them on LinkedIn. Like, they're just like one or two people working part-time outside of their day job most of the time. And so it's very much a trade-off that we made very intentionally of, we're going to actually spend time. And that's what a lot of the last 2 years was about, of actually integrating with tools that you already have, extending the platform in ways that make it more sort of, now we support, you know, working with existing cloud environments. You can import your existing infrastructure. All of that we did in the name of onboarding customers who already have a bunch of things set up. And so we add a lot of flexibility, making sure that we're not sort of sacrificing the core value proposition, because ultimately that's what they're buying. And if we give that up in order to give them flexibility, that's not a great trade-off. So not always easy, but probably the right decision.
Yeah, this is such an interesting and I'd say common problem that infrastructure companies run into of it's much easier to sell or find companies that don't have anything yet versus trying to, because it's so like mission critical, it's so hard to get folks to shift over. I'm curious at this point in time, so it sounds like you started with companies that didn't really have anything to start with. And now you've moved into integrating, assuming that's going into bigger, more established companies. Are you still serving both? Or have you really just gone to the path of integrating bigger, more established companies with existing infrastructure?
Because we started from the perspective of like, okay, we're going to build a really, really productive workflow. And what we see is developers just fall in love with it. And so that's still the key, is we need to provide that workflow and that productivity and that ease of use and that seamlessness and get people to fall in love with that. But then once you sort of have a convert, if you will, and they want to bring it to their company, then we need to meet the platform team where they are. And we need to make sure that the product is sort of malleable enough that it will work with their constraints on like, okay, we've chosen to use Kubernetes in this way, or we're deploying things in this way, and it needs to interoperate with our existing backend services that are set up in this way and so on. So fortunately, at least for us, it is working out that I think a lot of it comes from the fact that when you are building backends, whether you're using Kubernetes or something else, Kubernetes, it's designed from the ground up to support lots of different backends and workloads that use different underlying technology. And so that really helps with the sort of interfacing between the stuff that's written with Encore and the stuff that they already have.
And so I think one big change as well is when you started, you definitely was Go as the main language and pretty much Go only, right?
Yeah.
Build all your services, SDKs, everything, because there's a lot to cover and get integrated. I think that's also like a choice I remember we talked about 2 years ago. You just launched TypeScript support, right? Talk about like the choice of picking one language obviously was coming from your background and, you know, why TypeScript, right? And why focusing on it now? And what is the sort of the motivations, right? And is the experience going to be exactly the same of Go developers versus TypeScript? Maybe talk about the differences here.
So when we start out, as you said, our belief was that, like I said, Encore provides a much more productive experience and developer productivity compared to like the way you typically build backends. And so we were thinking the differences between programming languages in terms of productivity are on the order of like single digit percentages. So clearly it's a no-brainer that, you know, if here's a product that makes you twice or thrice as productive, you're just going to jump on that, even if the language isn't what you would have preferred. And that turned out not to be the case. I still think that's true in terms of the numbers, but it didn't take into account the network effects of programming languages. And so a lot of CTOs primarily think about programming languages from a hiring perspective, both in terms of what's the pool of people that we can hire. You know, not every startup is the coolest thing in your city or your country or the world. And so whether you can access several thousand people who know TypeScript or 100 people who know Go, that's a real important decision. And it's not helpful that you can find one Go developer who's three times as productive if you need to hire 10 people. It's not a good decision. And then when you get into the fact that companies have already chosen a programming language and the developers who are working there are comfortable with that, and they might have joined that company because of the tech stack or because of the programming language that they want to work with, suddenly the decision to use another programming language, it could really negatively impact morale as well. And maybe people wouldn't want to work there. those were the main factors that we underestimated when we were thinking that this strategy would work. Beyond that, I think in many ways, like at that time, Go was a very rapidly growing language. I think a lot of that was just the Kubernetes sort of hype, and Docker and so on. I think it's not growing as quickly anymore, whereas TypeScript in particular keeps on chugging, and same with Python, arguably. But I think another aspect that we didn't really think or we didn't realize at the time was that programming languages have a culture. And that culture, it's not really about the features of the language. It's more about sort of like a self-fulfilling culture of how do people work in this language. And so what we found, if you look at Encore, it's an integrated product, and a lot of people look at it as like a backend framework. And I think that's largely true. Like you can argue semantics, but Go in particular has a fairly sort of anti-framework culture. And there's a lot of sort of emphasis in the Go ecosystem around sort of doing things yourself, only using the standard library, only like setting up your own observability very early. And so the benefits that Encore provides in terms of automatically doing a lot of these things are not as useful if you've already done that, because that's sort of like the culture of the language. And so a lot of these things made that as we were selling Encore, we found that actually the value proposition, it doesn't really resonate with this audience as much as we expected. And what we found was a lot of companies we talked to, and we found like, okay, these are using Go. It turned out that when we reached out to them, they weren't using Go anymore. They had actually moved over to TypeScript for sort of easier hiring. And when we found those people, they were suddenly very interested in the product. And so there were like a lot of signs pointing to actually this strategy. It made sense from a product development perspective, because as you say, supporting a bunch of languages is a lot more work. But there were a lot of signs pointing to we need to broaden beyond Go, at least. And so TypeScript made the most sense, because as we were trying to find Go companies who we thought this would be really useful for, we were succeeding more with finding TypeScript companies. and that was sort of a good sign that that's probably the place to look.
Awesome. So we wanted to make sure that we talked a good amount around go-to-market and what you've learned the last couple of years. You can see on your blog just how much that you've invested in content, a lot of content that's not even specific to Encore, but just around some of the pains and like different frameworks you touch. Has that been really helpful from a go-to-market perspective? Or like, what are the different things that you've tried that have been unexpectedly good?
Yeah, I think content is the best thing we found that scales. We needed to resonate with CTOs and decision makers. So a lot of what we've done is really worked with like the community to bring in like guest authors to write articles about things that like they are really knowledgeable about. And in doing so, they both bring their audience if they know something about, like they have an audience themselves. But it also positions Encore as an authority on that subject. So we worked with a bunch of people in sort of the Go community around things like, here's a really detailed post about retries, which is like a subject that like, it's not the sort of like, I'm learning to write Go for the first time, or I'm doing a coding bootcamp or something. It's something that resonates with more experienced developers. And then if we're writing about that, a lot of people will start sharing that because it's really in-depth and valuable content targeting more experts. It brings a lot of value to us as a brand that like, okay, these people seem to know what they're doing. Like we have retries, we have error handling, we have things about sort of distributed systems and failure scenarios, like how distributed systems break down. And we're an early stage startup, so we don't have the time and the resources to spend writing that ourselves. So it's been really successful to work with other people in the community to sort of get them to add that. And of course, we bring our own experience and we can sort of go back and forth on what the subject should be. And we can come with suggestions, of course. But I think that's been by far the most sort of both impactful in terms of just absolute numbers, but also really good from like a ROI perspective, very time efficient from our side.
So maybe the other side of that question is, what are things that you hoped could have worked out? Maybe in terms of content or marketing or anything that you feel like is a major lesson. I mean, every start we have to try a bunch of things, right? But what are major lessons of things that didn't work out? And maybe you can share some lessons there too.
We've experimented with a lot of things. We've experimented with paid advertising. We've experimented with sponsored links in newsletters. We've focused on sort of Hello World content for like, if you don't know programming, like here's how you can build a REST API and on. What's really difficult, I think, with a lot of that is like actually understanding what works is almost impossible. And I think when you come to something where it's like, you know, if you write a blog post about retries and you rank on Hacker News and you get a huge sort of influx of people and it's sort of, okay, you can actually see the impact over the next week or so, you get a fairly clear sense of like, okay, what did we get out of this compared to a sort of baseline? When you're doing something over time, like paid advertising, it's very fuzzy. Like, okay, how do you actually track these conversions? Like, were they coming from an ad or not? That part is super difficult, especially when you're looking at developers who have ad blocking and so on. Like, it becomes very, very difficult to judge, like, are we even getting a positive ROI out of this? We spent a fair amount of time experimenting with that and didn't really reach any conclusive data, like either way, like, are we getting anything out of this? Because tracking that is so hard. We've done a fair amount of sort of conference speaking. We've done both in-person conferences. We've done online conferences. I think by far the worst ROI I've seen is online conferences. Obviously, a physical conference is much more work, but at least people are engaged. If it's like an online conference, like people just put it on in the background and forget about it. So a lot of things that really haven't worked. And what's so frustrating with some of them is you don't really know, like maybe they worked, but it's so hard to tell. And I think that's the biggest struggle when it comes to anything like marketing and driven is how do you find the signal from the noise?
Yeah, I think this is something a lot of open source companies struggle with because you don't want to over market to the community. And it's tough because you can't really measure like pipeline the same way. So it's very, very hard, but helpful to hear the things that have worked versus not. So over the last 2 years, how have you thought about growing the community versus growing ARR? And how do you kind of balance those efforts and make sure you're not overly focused on one versus the other?
Yeah, great question. If we look historically, I actually think we haven't focused enough on the community side. Like a big part of Encore is open source. With that said, like from a business perspective, the reason why it was so obvious from day one that Encore needed to be open source, it came from sort of like a business risk perspective of when we were talking to companies, there needs to be, especially as an early stage startup, like there needs to be ways of mitigating the risk of like how can we depend on you if you might not exist in a year or two. So that was sort of our initial perspective of like, okay, we need to make this open source so that even if the company goes under because we're an early stage startup, you're not held hostage or like your code will still work. Almost every single one of our customers, they're building their whole product with Encore. So it's a very big decision, right? And so we invested a lot in that angle of open source is you need to feel that you can trust that things are going to keep working. But because it's very much about the sort of integration aspect of how do we provide a really compelling workflow from idea to production, a central part of that workflow is a part of Encore that's not open source. And so what we've seen is that most Encore users and pretty much every customer, they're, well, customer by definition, but almost 100% of our user base is actually using Encore via the sort of commercial platform that we offer. And we have a free tier and so on. But there are relatively few who are only using the open source version. And that's actually something we're in the process of changing. We're in the process of opening that up, so it's much easier to use only the open source version. And as part of that, focusing much more on community over ARR. I think from our perspective, it's both sort of the marketing benefits of, okay, how do we use open source? How do we use the fact that this is really interesting technology to sort of drive awareness? And obviously contributions are always valuable, and whether that's adding new features or documentation or tutorials or whatever. But I think another aspect is from a go-to-market perspective that we underappreciated is it's a much easier way into a company to lower the barrier of entry for them as much as possible. So if it's much easier to use Encore in a way that's completely open source, like don't even talk to us, just like download it and use it to build backend services in your team, and you have a good experience and your colleagues have a good experience, and then the other developers in other teams get jealous and then they want to use it, and then it will just spread internally. Even if they're only using the open source version, that's a really good place to be because they're constantly interested in Encore and they're going to look at all of the product announcements that we're doing, and they're still going to be using all of this surface areas that we're providing. So it's a much easier path from there to like, okay, we added this new feature. Is that interesting to you? So I think we underappreciated that sort of ramp to actually getting revenue, actually leveraging open source, not just for the sort of marketing benefits, but just as a way to make it easier for companies to adopt your product.
So I guess still the last question you usually ask all founders is advice you'll give for open source founders. And you're 3 years in the journey, or maybe even more. Definitely building Encore has been like a long time journey for you, I remember. What advice will you give somebody starting a new open source developer related company from almost day one? What will you usually tell them?
Well, I'll start by saying maybe don't do yet another AI LLM thing. There might be enough of those. No. For us, I think we focused very much on revenue and actually building a sustainable business. And I think we probably, like, I look at open source as a spectrum, right? Like, you have some people like to think of it as very binary of like, okay, either it's an OSI approved license and then it's open source, or it's not, right? But I think when it comes to building an open source company or building a company that is providing a product that is open source to some degree, I think a lot of that historically, it's been an underappreciation for the need to build a sustainable business. And by that, I mean finding ways to make money. So that's always been very much top of mind for us from day one. And I think, as I just mentioned, maybe too much, because there are real benefits to open source from a sort of traction and adoption perspective. But I think either extreme is bad. And that's my main piece of advice, is don't over-index on sort of like, we're going to give it away for free and then make money. Because even though there are a lot of examples of that being successful, a lot of that is survivorship bias, where you find the ones that did make it, but it's a very difficult business model, I think. And it's better to figure out the path to revenue earlier than when it's too late.
Well, this was such a good episode, especially given that we talked 2 years ago and there's so many new learnings since then. Thank you so much for joining us, Andre. This was awesome.
Thank you very much for having me.